Mark Durkan is MP for Foyle and a former leader of the SDLP. He gave up a seat in the Northern Ireland Assembly and now concentrates on Westminster politics. Mark, thanks for coming on the programme. What inspired you to join the SDLP?
Well, I was born in 1960, so I was a child at the time of the civil rights movement. I was conscious of issues in Derry. I saw change. I saw how much John Hume and people involved in the civil rights movement, who then went on to form the SDLP, were part of that. But it wasn't from a particularly political family. I knew as a teenager in the 70s, Derry, that it was instinctively anti-violence. I liked the message of unity through reform and reconciliation. I liked the whole principles of the civil rights movement that the SDLP continued to reflect in the way they stood for partnership and power sharing, and of course I totally opposed violence from any quarter. But as a young student, I was as good a barstool critic of the SDLP as anybody else was. They weren't red enough for me, they weren't green enough for me, they weren't whatever. And it was really in the context of the hunger strike as a student at Queen's, and seeing how much that divided my own group of friends and divided the wider population. And I felt all the emotions of the hunger strike, as with everything else. But it seemed to me the only party who were trying to deal in that situation on the basis of real reason was the SDLP. And it was at that point, really, that I actually joined the party for the first time.
Well, we're in a very different situation at the moment. We have Tom Elliott's just announced he's not standing again as UUP leader, and Alistair MacDonald's leadership of the SDLP hasn't exactly got off to a great start either. So what is the future for the centre ground in Northern Irish politics?
Well, I'm not sure that it actually helps to talk about any one party or group of parties as the centre ground as such. I mean, the SDLP basically were the pathfinders for the new constitutional ground that everybody is now on. I mean, we didn't try to carve out a bit of ground and defend it as our own. Our whole point was about trying to engineer the progress, engineer a new shared democratic stage that everybody could participate in. And I think a party like the SDLP isn't well served, even by the language of centre ground as such, because it appears as though we're trying to say we are in a particular place and we want it to ourselves and we don't want others there. And the way in which sometimes people try and say, well, we should be looking at things as though there's an axis for the SDLP and UUP that has to work, and if it's not that, then it's something else. So I think we're now in a situation where parties need to be thinking not about whether they're on the centre ground or whether they're on this ground. Parties should be saying we're all in a new space, in a new place. It allows all of us to set out our stalls, not just on the traditional political issues that have fixated people here in Northern Ireland, but in the many other challenges and opportunities that we now face in the whole social, economic, cultural and environmental mix that affects and concerns people at the start of the 21st century.
If the SDLP, though, was to bring itself back to its former glory, so to speak, can it do that from within the executive, or do the SDLP and maybe the Ulster Union just need to leave and set out their own stall, separate from the executive?
Well, first of all, I think all parties can do that. All parties can be within the executive and within the assembly, you know, and be part of those arrangements, but at the same time set out their own very distinctive agenda, speak with their particular accent as far as some of the issues and ideas that are motivating people. So that's what we have to do. I don't think it's a case that simply if you're in the executive, you can't be distinctive yourself. And if you're outside of the executive, that suddenly you will be free to be all sorts of things and recognised in a completely new way. You know, I think that's a bit of a false argument. So I think what we have to do is recognise, look, nobody advocated the institutions and model of the Good Friday Agreement more than the SDLP did. We literally scripted it into the negotiations. We literally drafted large chunks of the agreement. So we have to get a mandate for those institutions. And the mandate we have is also to be within those institutions, even though the mandate you know, should have been better to allow us to be in those institutions more strongly. But that's what we have. We need to just fight our own corner strongly, not negatively, but strongly. And we need to be showing people that really the issue isn't whether you're in the executive or not. The bigger question, I think, for people should actually be, what's the Assembly doing? Because politics in Northern Ireland, everything ends up being about the executive, the executive, the executive. We elect 108 people to the Assembly. The Assembly is meant to hold the executive accountable. It doesn't. It doesn't get a chance to. The executive is meant to be the budget authority. For the past 5 years, the Assembly is meant to be the budget authority. For the past five years, it hasn't worked on that basis. Budgets were handled in a different way previously in devolution when I was Minister of Finance and Personnel, and then when I was Deputy First Minister, the Assembly actually got playing its role. And in circumstances where people want to know that ministers aren't just cornered by civil servants into taking decisions and then the executive don't just rubber stamp those, the Assembly has a role to play. And that's all parties, because all of the parties who are in government are also all of the parties who are meant to be part of providing that accountability and that scrutiny challenge on behalf of the wider public interest. And I think if the Assembly was allowed to be more of a chamber of accountability, parties like the SDLP would be able to show themselves, show their positive agenda much more positively.
Well, you focus your energies now mainly in your role as an MP in London. Do you miss Belfast?
Yeah, I miss the accessibility, I miss the immediacy, I suppose, of the Assembly. But and as someone who, you know, was centrally involved in, drafting, the structures of the Good Friday Agreement, not just in relation to the Executive and First and Deputy First Minister and all that, but also even in terms of the Assembly structure and the mandate for committees and all the rest of it. That's really where I would like to be. But the fact is, for Westminster, which meant giving up the seat in the Assembly, which also meant then really giving up the party leadership too. But in Westminster, I'm able to concentrate on issues that have always motivated me, issues like international development, issues like the environment. And of course, I'm able to deal on a wide range of policies that have either direct or indirect effects here. So at the minute, I'm on a bill committee for the Financial Services Bill, which doesn't just deal with the future regulation of the banks. And we know that that has huge implications for everybody, not just in what you do in terms of any financial service, but it hit us all as taxpayers having to cope with the bailout. But it's also going to affect credit unions here, because this bill and the changes in regulation that it brings is going to be the context in which credit unions in Northern Ireland for the first time will be able to offer a whole range of new services that they've been trying to get their hands on for many, many years. So just because you're at Westminster and sometimes some things appear to be at a remove from devolution, some of the issues you're dealing with will directly affect devolution and feed into what's coming to the Assembly. And the big obvious one of those, of that in the past year, has been the Welfare Reform Bill, where I have voted against the Welfare Reform Bill in Westminster at every single stage. I've spoken against many of its provisions. Unfortunately, it's now passed, and the kind of amendments that I was supporting weren't accepted. But now that that's been passed at Westminster, the Assembly is now expected to pass a similar bill, what I would call karaoke legislation. But some of the points that I and others have been making about trying to chip some openings into the legislation, at least help to create room for a wee bit of discretion on the part of the Assembly. So maybe even if they can't change the terms and the rates around benefits, they can get a bit more flexibility over how to implement some of these things.
So you don't feel that working the system within Westminster makes you any less of an Irish nationalist?
No, I absolutely don't. I mean, I always make the point that I get stuck in the House of Commons. I don't get sucked in the House of Commons. There's, things happen there that I'm not particularly part of or party to in any way. I don't think I'm in any way diminished as an Irish nationalist any more than, the Scottish nationalists who are very active and vocal in Westminster are diminished as Scottish nationalists. I mean, those are the arrangements that are there if we want to engage in the democratic process. And if you want to achieve democratic change, working through the process is the only way of doing it. And I have to represent people, not just as nationalists, but I have to represent people as workers. I have to represent people as people who need public services. I have to represent people who help provide public services. I have to represent people who are on benefits. I have to represent people who want to know they're getting a fair shake as consumers when it comes to things like banking. I have to represent people who are credit union members and want to know that credit unions in Northern Ireland can provide as good a range of services as the much smaller credit unions in England are able to provide. And I can't do that unless I go in and actively take up my seat in Westminster and fight those people's corners.
Well, Sinn Féin obviously have taken a very different approach, and they've focused their energies on institutions within the island, and they still have an abstentionist policy towards Westminster, and that has been to a large extent rewarded by the electorate. I don't know if it's a major factor, but it is popular. Can the SDLP ever rival Sinn Féin within the nationalist community if they don't start to organise right across the island?
Well, first of all, I mean, we're committed to institutions. We're no less committed to institutions in the island than Sinn Féin are. In fact, the SDLP were committed to institutions in the island long before Sinn Féin were, because the SDLP believed in creating power-sharing assemblies. The SDLP believed in creating a north-south ministerial structure for all the years that Sinn Féin absolutely opposed that and supported the violence of the ARA in opposition to any such institutions or measures. So there's nobody more committed to these institutions than the SDLP, and indeed we wanted those institutions to develop and work. And one of the frustrations that we've had in recent years is that the North-South Ministerial Council hasn't gone anywhere in the past 5 years. There's been no development of any of the areas of cooperation. The implementation bodies are all stuck in a rut, have had no expansion of the remit. Several of them have had their remit actually reduced and their budgets reduced, and Sinn Féin have been party to those decisions of actually rolling back North-South and letting it stay in a rut. So we're the people who have been trying to, who were inspired to create these institutions in the first place and set them out, and we wanted to take them forward. We never wanted them to be static. But part of moving institutions in Ireland forward as well, on a north-south basis and also within the north, is moving forward British-Irish arrangements. And again, we feel that being positively engaged in the House of Commons on the things that matter to people of economic, social, environmental, cultural and international concern is part of moving things forward on a wider British-Irish level in ways that are positive for everyone in the island of Ireland as well, because things happen positively at a British-Irish level, help things and help the atmosphere in Ireland. And we saw that with the Queen's visit, for instance, to the south last year, a visit that we always supported and Sinn Féin actually opposed. But the fact is, relations and attitude within the island were actually all the better for the fact that that visit was able to take place successfully, not least thanks to President McAleese and all the work that she and Martin McAleese had done. So I don't think any of these things should be, you know, contraposed or whatever. And in doing all these things, the SDLP's only agenda is not just about how to counter Sinn Féin. We have to be doing these things because it's what we believe in. We have to be doing these things because it matters to people, it helps people, not because it helps us in a particular political battle against Sinn Féin. If our only agenda is seen to be how we compare to Sinn Féin, then we really are in a rut that we're not going to get out of.
There's been some talk lately about a border poll. However, support for United Ireland is probably at its lowest point for decades. Is the reality that the SDLP voters don't actually have much of an interest in a United Ireland?
Well, I don't believe that that's the case. I think the SDLP voters do have a big belief in a United Ireland. But I think they're also people who aren't just focused on that. There are people who want to make sure that we have a united Ireland that is a stable Ireland, that is a prosperous Ireland, that is an Ireland of social solidarity and firm equality. So they're not just focused on one issue and one issue only. In terms of the nationalist electorate, I think they want to see united Ireland. They want the institutions of the agreement embedded and developed, I think, in a stronger way than they are at the minute. I think sometimes in surveys, when people are asked questions, a range of questions, people kind of think it's almost like these are almost like different competing options. And I've seen some surveys where it seems to me that some people are answering that they support the institutions and are satisfied with the institutions currently. And therefore, if they say that, that means they're not then saying they want a border poll on a United Ireland to change the institutions. And so I think in relation to the whole debate on Irish unity, the SDLP we need to do more to get our ideas and our understanding out there of how we see Irish unity in the context of the Good Friday Agreement and how we see the principles and protections of the Good Friday Agreement enduring in the context of Irish unity as well.
Does that mean then that the institutions that exist at the moment in Northern Ireland would stay?
They could stay. Obviously, they would change in a very significant way, but I mean, what we have set out in our previous documents on unity and the Good Friday Agreement is the Irish people have voted and overwhelmingly to support the institutions of the Good Friday Agreement. That's been the high watermark of Irish national democratic expression. You don't want to create a referendum on unity in a way that suggests, right, if this referendum on unity takes place, that washes away the previous referendum and washes away the agreement. It has to be that no, the institutions and the promises that we made to each other in the agreement are a given, but we're also being allowed the additional choice as to whether we want to work these arrangements with the North inside the United Kingdom or inside the United Ireland. And so the referendum then basically is about just changing the footing. And in the and if it's a vote yes for United Ireland, then the North is part of United Ireland, but that leaves room. There may still be some functions or powers devolved, but they will adjust and they will change using the review mechanisms of the Good Friday Agreement. We built review mechanisms into the Good Friday Agreement, and when we wrote those review mechanisms into the Good Friday Agreement, we intended them to be usable, not only up to and until there was United Ireland, but also in the event of a United Ireland. Now, the nature of devolution would change, partly because the nature of Northern Ireland's presence in a real national parliament would change. At the minute, Northern Ireland has a very small number of MPs in a very big UK parliament. In the event of United Ireland, the North would have a very large proportion of members in a smaller All-Ireland parliament. So that would give the North much greater strength there, which would obviate the need for the same degree of devolution that takes place now. But all of those details would be the subject to negotiation using the review mechanisms of the agreement on the back of a referendum. So I think people need to maybe haven't sort of realised that the SDLP has actually already worked out the sat-nav as to how you would get from here to United Ireland and how you would navigate all the difficulties and the obstacles and the questions that arise and the whatabouts and the what-ifs. The SDLP is the one party that has done that. We've worked out the sat-nav. Sinn Féin make around sloganising about it and put up platforms in different towns here and there about it, but we've actually done the sat-nav work.
As your hometown of Derry approaches its year as the City of Culture, is now the time to sit down with dissidents and persuade them that this is good for the city?
Well, I think there's always time to sit down with everybody. I don't think it's just because of the issue of the City of Culture or whatever. The fact is there are different dissident groups who have mounted violence. I know there are other people who will call themselves dissidents who make it clear that they don't believe that the conditions exist to justify armed struggle, and I welcome the fact that those people say that while still having their own honest view about the arrangements that we currently have. But those who do seem to think that there is some purpose or agenda to violence, I certainly am happy to talk to them at any opportunity to make it clear, not just about my view, but to reinforce to them what's clearly the view of people in Derry, people who have real ambitions for this city and who see them attacking this city. And attacking a city like Derry isn't going to help Ireland in any way. So I would make that point to them, but I wouldn't expect the conversation to be just about them listening to me setting out my rationale. You can't engage in dialogue on things like this without being committed to the conversation. So I have to hear and understand, is there some ideas out there that they have that the rest of us haven't seen or haven't clicked onto somehow? Are there some issues there that particularly drive them that can be addressed in a way that then mean that they can open their eyes to something else? You know, we've been through dialogue that many people told us was going to be hopeless with loyalist groups. We've been through dialogue that many people told us was going to be hopeless with people who were committed to the provisional movement. I have no problem about engaging in dialogue with dissidents of all sorts of various varieties, not necessarily that I'm confident it will produce the same outcome as previous dialogue, but because I don't believe that it can do any harm, and I think it is the responsibility of a Democrat who believes only in dialogue and not violence to engage in dialogue with everyone, even those who do believe in violence.
Well, there's no doubt that Derry has changed dramatically in recent years. I mean, recently we've had the opening of the Peace Bridge and the Ebrington Complex as well, and that's provided some great PR for the city, but there's still a huge divide there. What's been done to bring back the Protestants who left the city side during the Troubles?
Well, first of all, there is a huge divide in Derry, and that's always been my argument to people in the city at times, that, you know, we could sometimes smugly, you know, look at problems in Belfast and say, oh, well, thank God we don't have those sorts of interface tensions. But often it was because Derry was much more spatially segregated, and therefore you didn't see those hard-edged clues. I have said, but it's not just a matter about avoiding the negatives. If we want this to be a truly shared city, we want this to be a city in which everyone is proud and safe, regardless of their identity, regardless of their occupation, and regardless of their sexuality.
Well, it may still be quite a way off yet, but are you minded to run again for MP for Foyle?
Yes, I would be minded to run again as MP for Foyle. Obviously, there's a boundary review on at the minute, but the boundary could well change. The proposals are to change the boundary. We'll have to see what comes out at the end of that review. But on the basis of, you know, the service I provide within Westminster, on the basis of the service I provide at constituency level and the leadership I offer here in the city and its surroundings, I will be very happy to put myself forward again to be a strong and proud representative of the people of this city.
Sinn Féin are closing in on the SDLP in terms of numbers of votes in the Westminster election. If you don't run yourself, do you think Sinn Féin might have it in the bag?
No, I don't necessarily think that. So I don't think it's all, about me. Never did and never do. I think people in Derry have been making their choice in relation to MP for different reasons. And remember, I've come out with and I've fought elections where there's been other elections on the same day. And the fact is, in the Westminster election, I've come out with a much bigger vote, not just than my party did in the other election, but Sinn Féin have ended up with a smaller vote in the Westminster election than they did in the other election as well. And I think that's because people see a value in having a working MP, as I say, who doesn't get sucked into Westminster and into all the cosy games there, but he does get stuck in on issues that matter to people here in the city. And the issues that matter to people in Derry that they write to me about, that they want me to fight on at Westminster, aren't just things like welfare reform and tax credits, which directly affect them, but they're also wider issues of international development and global justice, also issues of environmental responsibility, but also issues like what appears to be a health bill that only matters to England and Wales, but people know is all about defending the principles of the National Health Service, which, if it's lost over there, will end up feeding into changes here. So people know that they need somebody to say what needs to be said, where it matters, when it counts, and that's why they want a positive SDLP MP.
Mark Durgan, thanks very much.
Thank you very much, David.